This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. Welcome to The Showrunner, where we have one goal: teach you how to develop, launch, and run a remarkable show. Ready? And welcome, showrunners, to another episode of the Showrunner Podcast. I'm your host, Jared Morris, VP of Marketing for Rainmaker Digital, and I am joined here on episode number 48 of the Showrunner Podcast by Johnny Naster, my co-host and partner in crime here on the Showrunner Podcast. You know him as the host of Hack the Entrepreneur, best-selling author, coffee addict, defender of humanity, wearer of t-shirts, and today, binge listener of Green Day.
I gotta watch what I tell you, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
It just gets added to my intro.
Yes, it does. Do you want to let everybody know why you're binge listening to Green Day? And there's a point to why I'm having you say this, by the way.
Yeah, sure. I can. It happened randomly, but my daughter and I, during the week, the 5 days, we get up in the morning and we do something called a 7-minute workout. It's a free app you can download to your phone, or it's actually on YouTube too. But we do this. And so to do it this morning, my daughter got to pick the music. She picked Green Day, and it came out of my office because we actually do it downstairs where my office is, the workout. And Green Day came on, and it's been a long time since Green Day has been on the stereo in my office. And so it literally just kept playing because I'm on Spotify. So she started, I think, with Dookie. Yeah, it was. So it was like, that's like the 1990s sometime. And there's been like 15 albums since then. So I'm like 4 or 5 albums into it now by the time Jared called me and I had to turn it off. And I was like, wow, that was a lot of Green Day.
Do you do like air drumming when you're listening to bands like Green Day? Do you kind of get into it?
It's typically like that. So it's actually on my desk rather than in the air.
Yeah.
It's something that has driven every teacher I ever had in grade school up, just would like get so mad at me. Like, John, just can you stop drumming? And I wouldn't even notice I was doing it. And yeah, my wife says I do it all the time, but apparently it doesn't bother her. Luckily. So
that's good.
And I've had other people tell me that I kind of am just always sort of drumming on things. So yeah, when something like Green Day is playing, I'm definitely doing it.
So you and your daughter do this kind of workout thing in the morning, and you said you do it 5 days a week?
Yes.
5 days a week. And is it nice that you kind of have someone to do it with? So just in case you wake up and maybe you're not quite feeling like it, or maybe she wakes up and she's not quite feeling like it, kind of helps motivate the other one to get going?
Yeah, that was the only reason why we started it. Like, I had wanted to do it, and I had kind of done it on and off and on and off, mostly off myself. And then we decided she came down and just joined me one time and we did it. And then it's great because this morning she did not want to do it. She was so against it. And then it was just finally like, I was like, well, I have a call at 9, so I have to get it done. And so I just came down and like was about to start. And then she came like racing down. She's like, okay, I'm ready. And then she's like, but I got to pick the music. So yeah, having that, because it's typically one of us every day doesn't want to do it, but it's kind of like, well, here we are. It's time. And actually, funny thing, yesterday was Sunday. And at one point, I forget what I said. I said something like, okay, we got to do this now or whatever. And then I went in and I was making a coffee, hence the coffee addict. But then all of a sudden she was yelling at me from like downstairs. And I was like, what's going? She thought it was Monday. She was actually down here doing jumping jacks already. And I was laughing really. I was like, what are you doing? And she just thought it was time. And she wanted to watch a show on Netflix. So she had to get the workout done with me. And it was pretty funny.
So what I love about that is kind of this idea of an accountability partner, which you guys are for each other for working out. And I think it's dawning on me now that we may need to expand this into its own episode, because I've got some thoughts on this. And one was spurred by a comment that was made in the Showrunner podcasting community about a week and a half ago, right after we got done launching the Showrunner podcasting course. And Ian was actually, you know, in the little welcome message, he was introducing himself and he said, I enjoyed listening to the webinar last night. That's the webinar that you and I did on the final day of the launch. And he said, and you really have put a fire in me to get out my first podcast in the next 20 days, which is really awesome since the goal was 30 days. And he's cutting that, chopping 33% off of it and saying in the next 20 days. And he said, I've been sitting on this for too long already. And so, you know, he followed up that with, I think one of the points is that I was really able to hear last night was just start already. I've been hanging on to the thought that if I read one more tutorial or find one more promotion tip, I'll be able to make it better. I was afraid of starting with a wrong decision and I just wasn't starting at all. I know you've said it before, but throwing up the artwork really made me say, okay, we're launching by March 10th, no matter what, which is fantastic. Because it means that there will be one more great show by another enthusiastic showrunner out there. And it makes us feel good because that was right after the event that we had hosted. But what was even better is that Margot, also in the course, jumped into that thread and the two of them started going back and forth and they decided to become accountability buddies for launching because Margot is really wanting to get her show launched too. And so they kind of set these goals. They agreed to hold each other accountable, which I think is such a fantastic idea, whether it's for working out, whether it's for launching a podcast. And one of the things I started thinking about is when I look at all of my shows, you know, obviously The Showrunner, The Digital Entrepreneur, now with Brian Clark, The Lead, Podcast on the Brink, Assembly Call, all these shows that have been around for a while and constantly move forward. You know, I've either got a co-host or it's part of a network, or there's some type of built-in accountability. And the one show that hasn't quite had the same momentum is Primality Primer, which is still going and still doing well. But I wonder if kind of having some kind of built-in accountability partner or buddy for that show would help it move even further. And I don't know that. It's just kind of something that popped into my head. But I love this idea of an accountability buddy, especially for anybody who's struggling to get their show started, because it could be the key to you in those moments of fear or doubt or trepidation, taking that next step because you have someone to push you or pull you over the edge. So I love that.
Yeah, totally. And as you mentioned with like being part of a network or having a co-host, but it doesn't have to be that. What I've actually, because with Hack the Entrepreneur, obviously, I have Rainmaker, but it's like I published before that, so I don't have to keep that schedule necessarily. Yeah. But although you're probably thinking differently, for, like, John, you should just publish. But that's a whole side story. But what I've been, which I didn't realize, actually, I didn't realize I was doing it, but I am absolutely doing it, is having sponsors for my show. Having sponsors for my show is the accountability I need when it's like, last night and I have to record to get it to my editor because he's in Europe and can do it overnight for me and get it to me for the morning. And I need to get that episode out and it's late and I'm just like, oh my God, I don't want to do this right now. But I have a sponsor that paid me already for tomorrow. This has to be out. There's no backing out. And that's a great feeling because it actually kind of stops you from like even hesitating. But when it's like, oh, whatever, it's like no one's even hardly listening. No one will probably even notice is what you'll just tell yourself. But if you have that accountability and that accountability can come from numerous places, including with my now a sponsorship, then it's like, okay, I have to do this. This has to go out the door.
I love that. That's also a perfect segue into what we want to talk about today. Which is sponsorships, and especially adding sponsorships when you don't start out with a sponsorship. Because I know the majority of the people who are listening to this show don't have a sponsorship, and you may even be thinking, well, I'm not going to add a sponsor. I'm not planning on that, so why would I listen to that? Well, guess what? Neither was I. But now I have a sponsor, and I think there's an interesting story surrounding that, and you have stories about sponsorships, and we want to share some of those with you in this episode of The Showrunner. So, Mr. Nastor, if you're ready, we'll hop on to that topic now.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So, I guess I should start this episode, John, by just kind of telling the story real quick that happened, because I posted this in the showrunner course. It's so funny because like these things will happen and you and I both go through this and we want to share them. And we come on here and we share a lot of the stories on the Showrunner podcast. But a lot of times, you know, we don't have a recording for a few days and it doesn't go out for the next week. And sometimes you just want to get it out there right away. And so we have the Showrunner community inside of the course where we can share things, but we don't necessarily have a blog, which I don't know. Maybe in the future we'll add a blog to the free content that we do. But actually, I went in and kind of wrote about this as a new lesson inside of the Showrunner course. But I want to share it here too, because I think it's interesting, and I wonder if people would have handled it the same way I did. I'm curious what you think. I might have overdone it. I have no idea. It's how I chose to handle it. So with the assembly call, we started that show 5 years ago. This is a post-game show about Indiana basketball. It's grown steadily. We have an email list of about 1,700 people now. Our episodes get somewhere between 1,500 to 2,500 viewers and or listeners per episode because we do it live as a Google Hangout, and then there's a podcast. So the consumption is spread over some different mediums. But it's really, really grown. And from a monetization perspective, last year, we started doing some affiliate sales at Christmas time, and that brought in a few hundred bucks. And this year, we decided to expand it. So we've never had a sponsorship, have never had a sponsor. This year, we decided to do a little bit more with the affiliates, which we did, made a few hundred bucks. And we decided that this year, we were going to open it up for listener support and actually request listener support. And I've shared this before, that I was really nervous to do it. But once I did it, the response was phenomenal. I mean, we've made over $1,000 already just with donations, some small like $10, some recurring like $4 a month, and some bigger like a $250 donation, which was fantastic. And it's incredible to have an audience that believes that much in the show, especially when it's a show like ours that is, it's all entertainment. It's not like we're teaching people they're going to help something in their business or make more money. Like, you know, people are doing this because they enjoy it. They enjoy the community aspect of it. They want to support us in our internship program. And so we've done that. And then we also started selling gear. So we bought our logo and we've started selling, you know, t-shirts with our logo on it and coasters and sweatshirts and coffee mugs and all that. Had never really thought again about sponsorship because the listener support model was going so well. Well, about 4 or 5 days ago now, I guess from when we're recording this, SeatGeek came to me and asked if I was interested in doing a sponsorship on the assembly call. And SeatGeek is a ticket broker site. Think like StubHub. Uh-huh. And they have, you know, a couple of really cool kind of technology bits that they do. Like they have a way to tell you whether a certain price for a ticket is a good value or a bad value based on kind of the historical prices and the demand. So that's kind of cool. They don't have hidden fees that you get when you get to the end. So the price that you see when you're looking at it initially is what you get to the end. So it's cool. And what was really funny is that a couple weeks earlier, I had actually used SeatGeek for the first time to buy tickets. And we were up in Indiana for our assembly call meetup to buy one of our interns. Well, he's now full time on the show, but to buy him tickets to the game. So it was really interesting. And so they came, they asked if I was interested. We got on a call, talked about terms. All the terms were good. They wanted to go out the door doing $50 per episode to begin and do a 4-episode test. And I couldn't really see any reason not to do it because I looked at it as clearly a win for us because it brought in more revenue. It's clearly a win for SeatGeek because they want to target niche sports audiences. And that's absolutely what ours is. And then when I looked at it from the audience perspective, it definitely seemed like a win because obviously, people who are Indiana sports fans are going to buy tickets to Indiana games, maybe tickets to concerts, that kind of thing. And not only is it a good product that offers a good value that I like and have personally used, but they're also offering a $20 rebate to our listeners after they purchase their first ticket. So it really did seem like a win. And yet, I couldn't help, John, but kind of feel a little bit of trepidation, a little bit of worry. Simply because for the past 6 weeks, we've pushed listener support so hard and people were so generous donating without a sponsor that I wondered what the response would be if we did add a sponsor. If people would look at it like, oh, okay, so these guys are asking us for money. We give them money and now they're taking a sponsor. And you know, so we came to it, we agreed to do it, we agreed to start it on this past Saturday's game. So I only, you know, I had maybe 24 hours to communicate this to the audience prior, if I wanted to, prior to the, you know, doing the live ad read and it being on the podcast. And so I decided to send our audience an email and let them know what was going on, because I didn't just want to spring a sponsor on them in the episode without having told them, because it's been almost 5 years now without one, and it would have been such a change. And plus, I really thought it was, the more I thought about it, the more I thought that it was a great opportunity. We've always tried to make our audience feel a part of all the success that we've had and really show our gratitude and kind of make them feel like they're part of what we're doing and bring them along. And everything cool that happens, we share it and kind of explain the role that they played in it. Because without the audience, we're not there and no one's giving us any attention and it doesn't matter. So it's the fact that they listen and they watch and they subscribe that makes all of this possible. And I thought it was a great opportunity to communicate that, to communicate some of our numbers so they knew how big the audience had grown, and then just to be up front and let them know what was going on so that in case anybody did have a misgiving about it or feel bad, they could reply directly to that email and let me know. And so I wrote this long email. Out of all the emails that we've written this season, it had the highest open rate, and it actually had one of the highest click-through rates too, which was really interesting. And people were actually clicking on links below the big announcement part, which means that they read all the way through. And the response was fantastic. I mean, people were replying and congratulating us, saying how cool it was, how happy they were for us. We actually got more donations in. Like our donations, it was really funny. Our donations had kind of dried up after, you know, at the last week and a half or so. And then sending this email, which I thought would make them dry up for sure, we got a bunch more donations right after that, which was crazy. I'll link to this email, the full email. It's not a short email. I'll link you to it in the show notes so that you can check it out. But I'm really, really glad that I sent it. I was worried that maybe I was making too big a deal about it, or that it would seem like gloating, or the little thoughts of self-doubt that creep into your mind when you're going to send something like that. But it turned out to be such a great thing. And I don't know if that will work for all audiences. I'm not sharing the story to say you should do this, that, or the other. But I think to me, what it taught me was a lesson in really putting the audience first, trying to put myself in their shoes. And number one, share our show's success with them, and really just try and over communicate to them what's going on so they feel a part of it. And I think that's been such a big part of what's helped us develop a really tight-knit audience. And so I think whenever you're trying to make decisions for your show, whether it's, you know, communicating about a sponsor, accepting a sponsor, changing your format, adding a co-host, whatever it might be, remember that, you know, your core audience members, they want to feel a part of something. We've talked about companionship, and part of that companionship, I think, is communicating, you know, letting people know that they're part of your success, they're part of your journey. And I think it helps to deepen your relationships. And I really feel like sending this announcement out prior helped us do that. And ultimately, I think helped people be even more receptive to the idea of a sponsorship and to helping support our sponsor as a way to support us. So wanted to share that. And I'd love to get your thoughts on it, John, because I know that you read that, although I don't really know if you agree, disagree. And of course, you have your own experience with sponsors, too.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with what you did. It's different than how I did it, but our shows are completely different, and everybody's show and situation is completely different. When I first took a sponsor with Hack the Entrepreneur, first of all, I didn't have an email list, and so I couldn't communicate with them in that way.
Yeah.
And the next thing was that my show was really new, and I just rolled with it. I just started putting sponsors in. I wanted to put sponsors in as soon as possible, just so that people were used to it. My show is like, the audience size at that point is like a tiny, tiny fraction of what it is now. And I knew that. So it didn't really, to me, it was such a small amount of people kind of at the beginning that it didn't. But as the way you did it and the way you explain it makes perfect sense. I mean, 5 years into it, and you do have a super tight knit audience. And plus, I mean, from my business brain, from the business side, I'm just like, the way you sent out that email, I'm sure there's people who are thinking of sponsoring your show that are on your email list or that own businesses around that market, that it's also a great thing that, wow, they take sponsors and that's how they just approach them and ask them. That's also probably a good way to get new sponsors. But I think the fear of that your audience is going to dislike your show because of sponsors, I think is completely wrong. Mm-hmm. It's not completely wrong that you have that fear because that's natural, but that fear is completely wrong. And you'll find that out if you get to the point of having a sponsor and you put it out there. I've never heard of an audience backlashing. Actually, I've only ever heard that it enhances your show. It almost like legitimizes your show to your audience because we're so used to anything of quote unquote value that we've consumed on television, on radio, on podcasts, on YouTube now. Everything has a sponsor because that's where good production comes from. That's where good content comes from. That's where people that can actually focus on their audience and create good, valuable, useful things, they have sponsors to pay them so that the audience doesn't have to pay them directly. And that really, really helps. And so it really kind of elevates you to this new level. And I know that's hard to see when you're going into it. You think, no, they're going to hate it. But we're so used to it. And do your ad spots well. Try and make them so that they do hit your audience properly. Don't take things that you think would offend your audience, of course, all that stuff. But once it comes time to it, it's usually this fear is artificial. And your audience will actually, like you and like my show, it will actually add this legitimacy to it. And it actually heightens and kind of props you up to be even more of an authority in your space. It really, truly does. And that seems counterintuitive until you do it and this happens to your show. And then you're like, wow, all that stuff was... And not that those negative feelings in our head are wrong, because we do have them. I had them. Jared had them. I think everybody is going to naturally have that. But then you just sort of roll with it and you realize that it actually helps the show a lot.
Yeah. You know, the other thing too is... I mentioned that we had never taken a sponsor over the first 5 years, but it doesn't mean that we weren't preparing for the possibility. And here's what I mean by that is, even if you don't have a paid sponsor, you should have spots in your show where you are promoting your own stuff, because ultimately you're always the sponsor of your own show, because you're supporting your own show with your time and with your effort and probably with your money. And so clearly you should be sending people to your Twitter account or to your email list or to subscribe to your show or whatever you've decided that your call to action is. And so one thing that we have always done, I don't know if I shouldn't say always, we started doing this last year, I think, is having dedicated spots for calls to action. They've always just been calls to action for our own stuff. So at the end of our first segment of the show, which usually takes about 10, 12 minutes, we would do a call to action to our email list. And then in the mid-roll, at the end of our second segment, about the 25 to 30 minute mark, we've been doing this year a call to action for listener support. And then we would do one more at the end of the show, because it's about an hour long show, right before we do our final picks and last call, where we do one more call to action for the email list. And so when it came time for SeatGeek to sponsor, they knew which section they wanted. They wanted that first ad spot, which we always do. And so it wasn't like we were really disrupting the show. We were just changing what we were promoting. And so instead of telling people to get on our email list, now we were talking to them about SeatGeek. And so it was seamless from a production standpoint. And it wasn't really changing the experience that our audience was having, because they're used to a call to action right there anyway. And so I think that really helped us, both in terms of the ease of instituting the sponsorship, and again, just the ease of it being accepted by the audience, because this is, we were already using this part of the show anyway. It's not like we're now pulling content away from you for the sponsor. This is how this show is. And so I think doing that even before we had a paid sponsor, and even before we'd even thought about it, it's not like I did that and then was out looking for sponsorships. It just prepared us for the possibility if the audience got big enough. And that's, look, that is one thing, and it's going to keep happening. If you build a big enough audience, even if it's in a niche, if it's a tight audience, and if it's a reliable audience, and if it's a loyal audience, people are going to eventually want access to that audience. And so you've got to remember, A, that could very well happen and be prepared for it. But then B, also remember that you are giving your, you know, you're basically renting out your audience for 60 seconds or 90 seconds to this sponsor. So you got to make sure that it's a win-win-win. And I think, again, in how you communicate it and how you position it and just in how you plan and execute it, put your audience first, because without them, nothing matters. And I think that will come out. It's like, you know, you said, John, you know, sending that email was actually a great way to potentially get new sponsors. And I hadn't even thought about that until you just said it. I mean, you're right. Like, I do think that is a potential bonus, but that was never my thought process. The thought process was always, you know, what's best for the audience? What's best for the audience? What's best for the audience? And erring on that side of it. And I don't know. I guess there are some situations where that could set you back in the short term, although I can't think of any off the top of my head. But in the long term, it's always going to help you out and help you build something more valuable, both for yourself, for your audience, and for a sponsor down the road.
Yeah, and that's a great point about having those spots already there and advertising your own stuff, because as just like an inside look right now, I go through mid-roll with Hack the Entrepreneur, as I've said, and mid-roll runs my sponsors, but this is first quarter and first quarter is not full. I've been almost full until this week. Later in this week, I start, like, literally I'm going to have one sponsor for one of my two ad spots per week for the next month. And then it starts filling up again, but it's just the way people's budgets work. And last year at this time, if this would have happened, I would have kind of freaked out and like been looking for people. I don't even want sponsors right now because I've learned the value of using those spots for my own things, yeah. Of which I have now. And actually a year ago, I didn't. We were coming into the first Showrunner podcasting course launch in about a month. And so I would have started to have something, but even just with my book, reading the different spots, like it's keeping up. I'm only assuming that that's where sales are coming from, because I sell 30 to 40 books a day still, which is shocking to me.
Damn.
But it's because I just keep, that's my ad spot. That's my pre-roll every single time now, a different hack that I read from my book and a quick call to action on it. And now I have a course that I pilot launched, following yours and Brian's sort of pilot launch method. And it's nice. Going to be doing a full launch coming into the end of March. And I'm so excited that I have most of my ad spots available for the month because I can use that for myself. And although it looked like a lot of money, those sponsorship spots before, but all I know is that no matter if they pay me $300 or $400 or $500 for that ad spot, which is a lot of money, they're only doing that because the return on investment is greater than that money. And I see that when I advertise my own stuff. And so that's a great point, is to just really start an ad spot, start running ads now in your show, but make them your own things, because they really do work. And that's why podcast advertising is so huge and podcast sponsorships are so enormous, because they really, really do work. And I think, actually, I believe strongly, and I don't have the data to back it up necessarily, but I believe that when you're promoting your own stuff as a real ad spot, it works even better. Mm-hmm. Because they already know, like, and trust you. And now you're just like hitting them with something that you know is good for them. And it's also directly from you. It's not you just talking about another sponsor. So that's I think if the takeaway from this is, it's to get your ad spots into your show now and find or create something, even something small, or even if it's for to get onto your free newsletter, get that spot and say it and learn to be like convincing and have a solid call to action in that exact segment every time.
Yeah. If that is the only reason you do it is to practice your calls to action, that's a good enough reason. I mean, there are tons of reasons to do it, but that's a great one. I mean, you get so comfortable at doing it and saying it. It's like when we did the SeatGeek one for the first time and after the IU Purdue game, I wasn't nervous about it. I didn't script it. You know, I had their little notes, but I already knew what I was going to say. I was going to, you know, say that we were really excited to have a sponsor for the first time, tell them my story about when we went up for the IU Minnesota game, and then explain what the deal was. And it was easy to kind of do it naturally, but only because I've done 300 to 400 calls to action. Like, if it had been my first one, I would have been so nervous and stumbling over my words, I would have had to read it out loud. So it's just practice. Like, there's just no shortcut to doing it. It's just practice and doing calls to action over and over again. Funny additional note. So I do this other IU podcast on the Brink. And they also reached out to Podcast on the Brink, and they mentioned it on the call with me. I don't think they know that I host both shows, which I thought was pretty interesting.
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, your calls to action are solid. You're like the master of them. I was actually on a call earlier this morning with somebody, and I was mentioning you and your calls to action, and the fact that you've done hundreds of them, and I'm not that good at them. But also, as your email sort of had like this backhanded sort of benefit of showing sponsors that you, potential sponsors that you are taking sponsors now, also having that ad spot and that call to action in there shows exactly like you said with SeatGeek, is that they knew exactly which spots they wanted. So it wasn't like you had to create spots and they'd be like some amorphous sort of like, well, maybe here you could. And it's like, nope, there's two call to actions that I do every episode. Which one do you want? That's another reason to put them into your show and just fill them with your own stuff for now. Get better at call to actions. And then it also shows sponsors that no sponsor is going to reach out to you without ever listening to your episode first. And if they hear spots in there, even if they're yours, they're going to love that. And that's going to be like, oh, this is who we want. We want to sponsor this lady's show because she's already got spots. They're her own, but she does them really well. And we like the way she reads them.
Yes. And thank you for those kind words about my calls to action. Again, it is all a function of just doing them a ton, and you just get better at it with practice. The other thing that's interesting, and I think people need to keep in mind, especially if you've just gotten into this mindset of I'll never have a sponsor because I have a small show or I'm in a niche or whatever, watch out, because a lot of companies and advertisers are realizing the benefit of the small audience and realizing that even if it's a small audience, especially if it's a now. There's a distinction here. Direct response advertisements and just general branding. I think folks are having a difficulty for general branding advertisements, figuring out how to value them and figuring out how they get a lot of value from a smaller niche audience. But direct response ads like this one is, because in the ad, you know, we say, you know, go download the SeatGeek app, put in the promo code assembly, and you get a $20 rebate. So they will know who comes from the ad. They can really track it. And so I think those kind of advertisers are really finding success, even with smaller niche audiences, because sometimes with that smaller niche audience, it's, I don't want to say it's easier, but you'll find that it's very responsive, and they'll get, even if it's only 2 to 3, if the value of that is higher than what they're paying for the sponsorship, and typically they obviously will pay a lot less for a smaller audience, then it's a benefit. And so watch out, because I think there are going to be a lot more opportunities like that for smaller shows as we move forward, especially for direct response advertisers.
Yeah. They're going to knock it out of the park with your show.
I hope so.
Yeah, they are. That's so perfectly targeted.
It is. And, it really is.
And especially giving them, like having them give you like a promotion for your audience. If you're going to ever take on a sponsor, really push people to like Jared did, do 4 shows or 3 is what my minimum is, because it really does take hearing things. Like I've said on the call to action, it's when you get tired of it that people are just starting to listen. It's like the fact that I literally get messages on Twitter or email that, oh, I bought your book. And it's like, I know this person has been listening to my show for like 6 months. I know they've heard me. And I even make that joke sometimes, like, oh, you finally heard me say it enough times. Like, yeah, no, finally it just clicked in that I should buy your book. It's 2 months, like 200 calls to actions later, they finally do it. But so have that 4, and then also have something that is an incentive for your audience so that they really, it's direct response. You need to give people a reason to take action now. And it really, because then it helps the sponsor. And when it helps the sponsor, they want to sponsor you more. Mm-hmm. That's your job. You're as the podcaster, you should know what things work better, as in giving me a special offer, giving me a special URL, or something to type in, and then also being willing to at least sponsor 3 to 4 episodes first so that we can really kind of tweak what call to action works the best for you.
And one final comment too, and I will put a link to this in the show notes, and I forgot to mention this before, but when they reached out to me, they asked me what our numbers were. Knowing your numbers is important, and I know it can be difficult with podcasting sometimes to get numbers, to get reliable numbers, but don't use that as a cop-out. And so You know, you may only be able to get downloads, and that's okay, but have something to send folks so that they know what your downloads are. If you're a show like The Assembly Call, where you get viewers from different spots, like we have live viewers on YouTube, on-demand viewers on YouTube, we have downloads, and then we have people who listen on the actual episode page. We also have people who listen on our radio simulcast, although I haven't gotten numbers for that yet, but I'm hoping for them. And I have a big spreadsheet that I have, and it goes back all the way to last year on a game-by-game basis and then on a summary, so I can break it down to the full season and then conference season. And conference season is typically when the episodes, when traffic picks up. And so if your show is seasonal at all, this can be a good way to break it down, but have that. And I had it in a link, so all I had to do is just send it to them and they could see, all right, the live episodes get this and the podcast episodes get this and the average total audience and the average length of a listen is this, and it's all right there. And it's really, really helpful. A, it's convenient to have it all in a spreadsheet like that. And B, it's really helpful to just be able to send that. Then it shows that you're organized and it shows exactly what they're getting, which is what you want to do. I mean, you want it to be, you know, like you've said before, John, treat a sponsorship like a partnership. And that's really helpful. So I'll put a link, because I just use a Google Doc for this, and I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can see it. And maybe it'll, you know, spur something for you to create something on your own like that. But it's been, I wish I'd been doing it all five seasons of the show, because I could actually only go back 2 years to get the old data. I just started doing it this year, but it has been so helpful. And now I just do it every game, and it's really easy to keep up with.
Love it.
Are we ready for a podcast recommendation?
We're ready for a podcast recommendation.
Let's do it. So my recommendation today is not an actual podcast episode. People have asked me before what podcast app I use for the Android. And I've always said Podcast Republic because I have used Podcast Republic. And I don't want this to come across too negatively toward Podcast Republic because it's been good to me for the last year and a half. And so I don't want this to be a negative toward them. But I did switch to Podcast Addict. I like their interface better. I did pay the $2.99 to upgrade for no ads because I would find that I would always accidentally click the ad and it would be kind of annoying. So I paid them for the $2.99, paid them the $2.99 to get the ad-free version. And I like their interface better. There were a few quirks of Podcast Republic. Like if an episode was playing, but you were downloading it when it got to the part where it was at in the download, when you started playing it, it would skip ahead. Like there were some weird little quirks that I could never quite figure out. And I haven't experienced those yet on Podcast Addict. So that is now my new official recommendation for a podcast app for the Android, because it's the one that I use. And so I wanted to take this opportunity to let people know.
Love it. I can't believe you bashed Podcast Republic so hard, though.
I'm sorry, Podcast Republic.
Like most apps, and I think even like podcasts that we listen to, we do sort of jump around, and like there's so many apps you want to kind of try new ones. It's not like this one's horrible. Sometimes that happens, but even if something is serving you well, it's time to just try a new one, because it's interesting to see, at least from my perspective, it's interesting to see what people are kind of pushing the envelope with and creating, like putting new features, into it. And it's always interesting, I think, to keep kind of jumping to new ones. That's just me, though.
Plus, I mean, for there to be an app called Podcast Addict and for me to not have that on my phone and use it, I mean, it kind of fits. Yeah, it kind of fits.
It's a good name. It's a good name.
It is a good name. Do you have anything that you want to add to this section?
No, I don't at all.
So okay, now can I use this? I knew you were going to say that. So forgive me.
I know you did.
Forgive me for putting you on the spot. But okay, don't you think? Because I have fallen into this trap, you know, thinking I'm in podcasts. I have to listen to a certain amount of podcasts all the time, and I do try to listen to podcasts. And I, you know, even at a minimum, will probably listen to at least 3 or 4 episodes a week. And I try to listen to more, you know, when I can, washing the dishes, showering, out for a walk. But it is okay sometimes for podcasters to not actually listen to podcasts, isn't it? I mean, because we still, it's kind of the tug of war between creation and consumption. And sometimes you just have to buckle down and create and not be too hard on yourself if you can't consume. Would you agree?
Yeah, totally. I don't even think about it anymore, except for every Tuesday when we go to record.
And there's a little bullet point with your name on it that you can't fill in.
Yeah, exactly. But I really, it doesn't bother me because I know that I can't really create and consume most things at the same time. I really need to be doing one or the other. And since the beginning of the new year, I was trying to figure it out. I think I'm doing almost like 22 hours worth of like podcasting a week, like straight full on, like not writing show notes, not anything, like recordings, like from being on other people's shows to doing my own shows. And then also like working with the course, getting it out. And I'm working on my own course to get it out. So that's also a creation. Everything I'm doing right now is creating some sort of content. And it just does not allow me to the time. Plus, it's February in Canada. And so I'm not outside nearly as much as I typically am. And so in the summer, when I'm like hanging out at the park and with walking the dog and riding my bike all over the city, then I listen to podcasts all the time. And I also do a lot less work during that time because it's just I want to be doing other stuff. So right now in creation mode, I don't think that it allows for consumption. I really don't. I think you have to choose one or the other because I think they kind of pull from each other. And so you're right. I don't think you should feel bad about it. And I think unless you have a podcast called The Showrunner, where you're supposed to come up with a podcast recommendation every week. But literally since the new year, I've listened to about 60% of one podcast episode is all I got through this past week. And that was literally the only podcast I've listened to. It's just how it is. I mean, I've been listening to Green Day all morning and things to kind of keep me going and motivated and stuff that I can work to. I can't work to podcasts. If you can work to podcasts, then by all means. But you're right. Don't feel bad about it. Focus on your show. Focus on your creation. Focus on what you need to make for your audience and allow other people to consume your creation. I think it's essential. And then know that it comes in waves. And when it comes that I'm ready to consume a whole bunch of podcasts, I will. It's not that I'm not into them. It's just I don't have space for it in my head right now. So I think that's a good clarification.
And ironically, by not having a podcast recommendation, you just gave a podcast recommendation. It just wasn't an actual episode. It was about how to consume. So I think that was great.
Nice.
One follow-up question on that. If you are developing a podcast, and especially if you're still kind of trying to figure out what your idea, what your format might be, in that case, part of your work and even part of your creation, there's going to be some consumption involved there because you've got to do research. And so in that case, then you would definitely want to be consuming podcasts. Yes?
Absolutely. 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 Because that's pre-creation, right? That's kind of the ideation stage where it's like, I need to fill my head up with as many things so that I can kind of take parts of different things that make sense and put them into one new cool idea. Don't reinvent the wheel. Don't try and create something that's never been done. Take things from television, take things from movies, take things from radio, take things from podcasts, things that work, things that engage you, and try and meld them into something new for your market. But you're right. You have to, that's when it's like, okay, time to fill the head. And then it's like, once you have it, now drop it. Like, and that's when you literally like, do not listen to podcasts while you are in your pre-launch, trying to record, get them in the can, trying to figure out your format. At that point, do not be listening, because the problem is you're like, you record your third episode, you think it's great, then you listen to a different show and you're like, oh, what if I did that? You go back and erase everything and start over, and you never launch. You have to then confidently just, okay, now it's creation time, it's creation time, it's creation time, and go for it, and just block that stuff out at that point. And then you can get back into it if you want to sort of evolve your show, but really make the differentiation, I think. You have to do that. I think it's essential.
That was a great pep talk. I like that.
It's the Green Day.
It is the Green Day. All right, everybody. Well, we hope that you've had the time of your life listening to this episode of The Showrunner. And now we would like to welcome you to paradise by going to showrunner.fm, where we will give you the long view of podcasting. You can get... yeah. Are there any other Green Day songs I can work into this? Let me see.
Wow, you did the first one. I was like, is he going to get a second and then a third? That's impressive.
Yeah. So go to showrunner.fm. This is where you will get all of our free content. So you can join the Showrunner. There's an opt-in form right there. You can join the Showrunner, and you can listen to all the latest episodes of the podcast. And specific to this episode, you can get the show notes for this episode, which is episode number 48, this one has some goodies. The copy of the email that I wrote, a look at my stats, and a link to John's podcast recommendation. All right there in the show notes for this episode. Nat, you know, I feel like the only way for this episode to end is for like a secret song at the end. Maybe if people wait like a minute, you know, after the final track, then there's like a little drum solo from you at the end.
Nice. We could do that. All right. Toby, make it happen.
You're on, Toby. We'll talk to you next week, everybody. Oh, and we have a special guest next week.
Oh, we do.
We do. But let's not tell him who it is.
No, let's not, because I'm getting nervous already about it.
I know. It'll be better as a surprise.
All right, guys. Take care. All right. Thank you very much.
See y'all.